I don't even miss paid vacations and holidays.
Right.
And all that crap.
Got it. You ready?
Yep.
This is the
Doers.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Do it.
I love that you're doing that.
I do what I do.
Conversations with creators,
innovators,
and entrepreneurs from Lancaster and the Central Pennsylvania region.
These are the people who make Central PA a great place
to live, work, and play.
Start again.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today on the program, it's our second episode about the pivot to entrepreneurship with two Candy Factory members, Lucy Dowd and Brian Coe. The pivot is that moment when someone finally decides to take the leap and start a business. Lucy Dowd is an estate planning attorney who started her own practice 10 years ago.
I'm doing it. January 1, 2010. I'm going out on my own, and I just started calling all my clients.
After law school, Lucy worked at different practices until she began to realize how much more efficient a practice could be run by cutting down on overhead and utilizing technology and virtual administrative and paralegal services. Over a decade of running her own practice, Lucy has never looked back.
All of the angst of running your own business and that, you know, not knowing from month to month what your salary is going to be, it's so worth it to me to be my own boss and just to have that freedom.
Also on the program, it's Brian Coe, owner of the marketing agency Blackbird eSolutions.
The tagline is, we help companies get found online.
Brian took the leap to start his own company early in his career after spinning up a website for his father's business and getting a taste of consulting. But life circumstances led Brian on a journey back into the corporate world for a short time before going back out on his own with Blackbird. Coming from a long line of entrepreneurs, Brian has realized it's where he belongs.
I was born that way. I tried to do corporate, and it's never, it's just not my thing. I don't know.
Today, it's two conversations with two entrepreneurs talking about their pivots to starting businesses. We're kicking off the pivot part two with Lucy Dowd. You can find out all about what Lucy does online at lucydowdlaw.com.
Cool, awesome.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Brought to you by the Candy Factory.
Co-working in Lancaster.
I like to say I help people plan in advance for life events. So I help them do that by preparing all the documents they need for those life events, a will, power of attorney for financial matters, healthcare power of attorney and living will. I also work a lot with individuals with disabilities doing special needs trusts, make sure they can keep their public benefits.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and guardianships. And then I do estate settlement after someone passes away. And I also represent, I'm a solicitor for a sewer and water authority, which kind of keeps things interesting because it's public, you know, it's public relations, it's contracts, it's real estate, it's, you know, water and public utilities. And
I had no idea you did all that.
Yeah, yeah.
For the planning, the life planning stuff, is that called something? Are you a ex-lawyer?
Estate, yeah, estate planning. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And has that been consistent throughout your career?
Yeah. I started out thinking I was going to be a litigator, but the first firm I started with needed someone to help out with, and, you know, who am I to say no?
Right.
To, I'm like the new employee. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, thanks.
So, yeah.
Just going to move on here.
And I thought it would be really boring, but I actually enjoyed it because you get to meet new people all the time.
Sure.
Like you're constantly meeting new clients, hearing their story, kind of teasing it out of them. Sometimes they don't want to share everything, so it takes a little bit of teasing, and sometimes some want to overshare, and it takes, you know, getting them
to focus.
You have
to go the other way. Yeah, you have to go the other direction and sort of rein them in.
Focus on the task at hand here. But it's fun because, you know, and every family is different and every individual is different.
Sure.
And their situation's different. So, you know, you can't approach everybody the same. It's not cookie cutter. A lot of people think it is very cookie cutter, but it's not.
I would probably think that, yeah, that you're pretty much just doing this boilerplate thing. But I guess, yeah, just knowing, just in my circle of friends, the life situations and family situations, very dramatically different. And I guess that all cascades down into what they need.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, estate planning and that sort of thing.
It does. And part of my job is picking up the pieces when the planning hasn't been done or it hasn't been done well.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to see it from that perspective, too. And there's so much that can be done to prevent issues if only, you know, that client had gone to someone or had gone to someone who knew what they were doing.
Right. Do you have employees?
I use virtual paralegals. They're in Pittsburgh. We've never met face-to-face. I've been working with them for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, we talk on the telephone once a month. We have conference calls. We correspond constantly via email. All of our documents are shared with each other electronically. They're fantastic. It's a mother and daughter team. And I've had part-time admin type. I'm currently excited to be taking on an F&M student who wants to go to law school.
Oh, that's cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you can be a mentor as well.
Yeah. She's going to be very part-time, helping me out more in the summer because that's what her schedule allows. But
sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of a push-pull with me, is getting that perfect staffing. I like to go very low overhead. That's my goal. And I'm good on the computer. I'm fast. I'm a fast typer, and I like to type as I'm thinking.
Sure.
So I really don't need anybody to do typing for me. It's more of some of the other work. Oh, and I have virtual receptionists too. So I don't spend a lot of time like culling through those calls like, do you do this? And how much do you charge? And, you know.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
The virtual paralegals, is that a service that they provide remotely? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah, they have their own paralegal company.
Wow.
And it's only for estate administration. Like,
I see.
Just my estates. But they're fantastic. They know what they're doing. They have the software. There's this amazing software program in Pennsylvania. It was actually developed by a lawyer. And they have access to that program. I don't. It's expensive. I don't want to learn how to use it.
Sure.
It's really time consuming to learn how to use it. And they're both excellent at it. So I'd much rather pay them to do it.
But that's that thing. When you start your own business, when you start a company and it's just you, you do have to either learn everything yourself and take all that on.
Exactly.
Which for some people and in some industries, that's okay. Or you have to delegate.
Yeah.
And you have to find that good fit.
Exactly.
So let's go back to the beginning and talk me through the journey of going from this, you know, fresh out of law school, I just joined a practice, lawyer.
Yeah.
And then how you navigated to the decision and that pivot point where you said, I think I need to do this for myself.
Right out of law school, I went to a medium-sized firm. It was fun. It's kind of like what you see in those lawyer shows. You know, there were a bunch of us associates and we all kind of banded around together. We went to lunch together and complained about the partners together. And we'd hang out in the law library on Friday afternoon and wait for the last partner to leave so we could leave. You know, it was just the typical. But then it became not so much fun. Like there became this real focus on billable hours. And it just became this, you know, contest to see how many hours you could churn out. And to me, that didn't seem to be the kind of way I wanted to practice law. You know, I was just kind of churning hours and billing as much as possible, whether or not the case really warranted that much. I mean, they never said that, but it was kind of, you had to produce so many hours and you only had so many cases. So you had to do what you had to do.
That can be implied
by
quotas
and
caseload and that's what
exactly. And your salary and your bonus is based upon how many hours you bill. So you have to do it if you want to make money, and I definitely wasn't in it for charity. So left that firm, had another child, and then we moved to Pennsylvania, and I started out at a much smaller firm on a part-time basis. I still had, you know, younger kids, kind of wanted to do the mom plus working thing, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just a perfect fit. A friend of mine mentioned that there was an elderly partner who needed someone, you know, just to kind of help him out. And turns out he did not need anyone to help him mentally. Like, he was so sharp. And I loved learning from him. And he was great. Like 3 o'clock, we'd be mid-sentence and he'd say, oh, you got to go. Your kids are coming home from school. You better leave. And
cool.
So, yeah. So it was really cool. But he died and that firm imploded, just kind of fell apart. And he actually gave me like the best gift I've ever received professionally. Basically his clients. Like every time a client would come in to meet with him, he would invite me into the conference room and he would introduce me to them and say, if I die tonight, she's your lawyer.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's how I got the Sewer and Water Authority. That's how I got a bunch of clients. It was an incredible gift. And at that point is really when I should have gone out on my own, because I had this, you know, huge base of clients,
sure.
which most people, I'd only been practicing in Pennsylvania for a couple of years. Most people don't have that starting out. But I panicked and I felt like I wasn't prepared and I didn't have the staffing to go out on my own.
Sure.
So I went to a law firm, but I was my own law firm within a firm. Like, I never really assimilated. Like, I used their paralegals and some of their support staff, but I never really worked with any of the other attorneys. And I just felt like I was generating a lot of clients and a lot of work. And I looked around and there were some that weren't, you know, seemed they weren't really pulling their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Then the recession came and it was kind of like, you know, this is, plus law firms, to me, a lot of them are run very inefficiently because lawyers aren't business people. Like, mm-hmm. they don't intuitively know how to run a business. But law firms are run by lawyers for the most part. They don't hire outside business people to come in and, you know, tell them how to run a business. So I just felt it's too much overhead, you know, too much expense, too much waste. And I'm just, you know, kind of spinning my wheels here.
Right.
And I could take these clients and go out on my own and one, do better financially, and two, I could pick and choose what kind of work I wanted to do. If I wanted to take on a large pro bono case, you know, that would be on me. You know, I would
sure.
lose the income, but I didn't have to answer to anybody else about it. It was my choice. So being the nerdy lawyer that I am, I read a bunch of books on how to start your own law firm and what it meant to go solo and what kind of technology you needed.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And
so that's out there. Like,
there's books
resources.
About it. Yeah. Yeah. So I just decided I'm doing it. January 1, 2010, I'm going out on my own. And I just started calling all my clients. You know, you had to be kind of quiet about it.
Sure.
But I'm calling all of them and saying, this is what I'm doing. Hope you come with me. And they're all like, yes, we're coming with you. We don't know anybody else.
Yeah, especially if that relationship
yeah.
hadn't really been formed
yeah.
with that practice.
Yeah, they didn't know anybody at the firm. There's like, who else would we go with? So it worked out great.
So I mean, out of the gate, you had a roster.
I did. I really give credit to those lawyers who get right out of law school and just do it on their own, because it's competitive. There's a lot of lawyers out there and
yeah.
clients have a lot of choices, and you really have to kind of pound the pavement and get out there and get the word out and, you know, drum up business, especially with the work I do. A lot of my work's kind of transactional.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll work with a client for about a month or so, and then I may not see them or talk to them again, you know, for years.
Sure.
And so I'm constantly looking, you know, for new clients.
You had confidence in that change, but was it scary?
It was. It was really scary. The scariest part was, one, knowing how to run a business, which I really didn't.
Sure.
And my husband knew, you know, he majored in business in college. He was a huge help. And I was constantly like running things by him, bouncing things off of him. But the other part was, you know, you get a little complacent relying on staff. And I had paralegal help right away, but not full time. Like, it wasn't someone who was at my beck and call. So that was a little scary. Like, geez,
right.
you know, I might have to like run into the courthouse one day and get this filed all by myself.
I would imagine that's a pretty big change coming from even a smaller firm
yeah.
that's established
yeah.
and has that support staff that you can just say, go do this.
Yeah.
To, oh, I got to go do that.
Right, right, right. Like, this has to be filed today. Like, get it to the courthouse.
Right.
And it was like, oh, that means me.
Did you get any pushback from the firm?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I had heard from other people like, oh, that's not a female-friendly firm. And I was like, oh, what's that mean? You know, they've got a female partner. And it's not necessarily a male-female thing, but I think the law profession is kind of a good old boys network still, you know.
And, yeah, that sense is out there. Right?
Yeah, Yeah.
I don't know how true it is, but you can kind of imagine such a thing.
Yeah.
So you go out on your own and all of a sudden it's all on you. What has the growth been like? And this is 10 years, right? You just celebrated 10 years.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I can't believe it's been 10 years. It's really flown by, and all of the angst of running your own business and that, you know, not knowing from month to month what your salary is going to be, it's so worth it to me to be my own boss and just to have that freedom. Like I feel now looking back how constraining it was working in a law firm, and I didn't even realize it because I didn't know any different. So,
sure,
you know, now it's just, it's so freeing. But I think the biggest lesson for me was how to get out and get my name out there and network. And then I thought I would hate networking. Like, I relied on my clients to refer work to me. You know, like, gee, they're just going to keep telling people how great I am, and I'm just going to have these clients walk in. And then I realized, you know, I can't count on my clients to be my sales force. You
That's
know?
True, yeah.
Like, I mean,
you'll get some extent. Yeah, you'll get some of that.
And, yeah, and I'm fortunate. I do get that. But then, you know, you can't rely on that. So I realized I had to get out. You know, I had to get out and network. And I thought I'd hate it, but I actually really enjoy it. Like, I love meeting people who are in all different industries that do things that I've never even heard of or that I've never considered doing. And I really enjoy hearing their stories, especially different entrepreneurs, because I just find they have that passion for what they're doing. They have the energy. They have a lot of entrepreneurs, I feel, want to help other entrepreneurs.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a fraternity around the idea.
Yeah, there's that camaraderie, mm-hmm. and it's not really competition. It's camaraderie. And you don't see that a lot in the legal profession. Legal profession, there's a lot of like, oh, you're a lawyer. Like, what are you doing here? Like, you're gonna steal my clients. And I don't get that from, you know, networking with other businesses and it's been fun.
Well, that's great. Sounds like no regrets.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I've never go back. In fact, I've been approached, I don't even know how many firms have approached me and tried to get me to go back to the other side.
Yeah, the dark side.
Yeah, the dark side. And I've seriously listened and considered it because I'd be foolish not to, because,
absolutely,
you know, I have bills to pay.
Right.
But it just, to me, it was never attractive enough to
right,
to lure me into back into that.
Well, that's great. Congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to share your story with me. It's great stuff. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Visit us online at coworkinginlancaster.com.
Home of the Candy Factory, a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today we're talking about the pivot entrepreneurs make when starting businesses. Next up is Candy Factory member Brian Coe, owner of the marketing agency Blackbird eSolutions. You can find Brian online at blackbirdesolutions.com.
I run a company, a digital agency, although now it's not digital marketing anymore. It's actually just marketing. It's called Blackbird eSolutions. And it's, as we'll get into later, I guess, it's my second go with it. And I'm also, in the next couple months, launching a sister company.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So it's going to be kind of the next evolution of running a digital agency, working with clients, now working with investors to buy online businesses that are making money.
Oh, wow.
So it's the next evolution. But that's,
let's go back a minute, because you said it's no longer digital marketing, it's just marketing. What do you mean by that? Like, these
are, you can't really do marketing without
digital. That's a good point. That's a good point.
So one of the things, I've seen a couple of funny quotes that this is the year that they'll stop calling it digital marketing, just call it marketing.
We've kind of come. The internet thing isn't a fad.
Funny, it's not.
Tell me about the services you provide specifically.
So our core is SEO, paid search, some paid social, and then the analytics behind in the background to make sure everything works and to show that it works.
So that's the focus is on searching SEO.
The tagline is, we help companies get found online.
Got it. Do you do any kind of print, any kind of design?
No. Work like that? We contract out graphics design, development as well. No print.
So second go around.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the journey. Where were you working when you first decided to start your own company?
Well, I studied engineering, and I was doing that in Germany in the end. But at one point, I decided I didn't want to be an engineer, and came back to the U.S. and started working. I worked for a hosting company.
Okay.
And then the last thing that I did was software consulting. I had my first job or first, not job, my first company, I guess, when I was in high school.
Okay, so you were entrepreneurial from...
Right, I think it's in my blood. My dad was an entrepreneur.
Got it.
Okay. My mom did her own thing. My uncle was an entrepreneur, so it's kind of in my blood. And I tried to work for somebody and did the drive to Philadelphia, hour and a half, depending on traffic, and hated it. And then eventually my dad's actually the one that got me started because he said he was president of a security guard company, you know, like Rent-A-Cops.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, you know how to do websites, right, Brian? Sure, Dad. So I made a website for them, which is still around, which is not my best work, I would say.
not the showpiece.
No, not the showpiece. He's no longer with the company. He's retired. But
sounds like that was probably when you maybe thought the internet could be a fad.
Yeah.
Going way back, right?
So I did that on the side. And then eventually, after I did the software consulting, I decided this. I just want to do this full time. And it was the frustration of dealing with the man, I guess, the company.
Right. So what was that decision point like for you? Did you know anything about running a business? Sounds like you had resources.
No, I didn't. I mean, my father did, but I learned some stuff from him. But I studied engineering. I have a degree in German. I mean, there's nothing there that says business.
Was it scary?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How long did it take you to sort of find your feet?
I don't know. I mean, it started out okay. And then as often the start of a entrepreneurial journey, I had a lot of really low times.
Sure.
And the one thing is that when you first start, especially the working on a project and still having to find the next one was a challenge. So there's a lot of ups and downs. And that was probably the biggest challenge. And the most scariest thing was, am I going to have money next month because I forgot to look for new work and this one's coming to a close? What do I do?
Right. You get so heads down in the project you're in, especially right. If you love what you're doing and you're really into it, right? You've kind of in that flow.
Right.
It's hard to break away from that and say, where's my pipeline?
Right.
And where do I get it?
And there were times that I was pretty low.
Pretty lean.
Yeah.
Did you ramp up with employees early on or was it just pretty much you?
No, it was always, I worked with contractors, one, because I didn't want to have to worry about paying them insurance and
right. All
that stuff. Because that's, I mean, there's somebody I would love to hire, but he's their insurance holder.
Right.
And I'm not big enough to do that.
It's a, you know, that's a common recurring theme.
Yeah.
Is entrepreneurs in spaces like creative spaces and marketing and development consulting and those sorts of spaces, someone goes out on their own and they just sort of say, well, I'm just not even going to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's a very business centric thing. Like, you know, if you're managing a business versus just creating a really great job
right.
for yourself.
Well, that was the one thing I didn't want to do is create just a job.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the motivation to create the company that I did was that it could be done anywhere. Because I had roots still in Germany because I'd lived there for a number of years. And I just had the idea that I wanted to be able to be mobile. If I wanted to go live in Germany or Brazil or wherever, create something that could go with me.
Tell me about the transition back into working for someone else.
Right.
Because you don't hear that very often.
Right. Well, there was a girl.
Okay.
In 2013, I got married. And I cleared my calendar basically leading up to the wedding and a few weeks after so that I wouldn't be bothered. I could just enjoy the wedding and the honeymoon and everything at the beginning of August. Then I got into like the end of September and realized it's that pipeline thing again.
Right.
So I didn't have a pipeline. I had work, but I didn't have a pipeline. And so the thought was, well, what am I going to do? My wife's in nursing school. She's working part-time. I'm the one making the money, and I don't have a pipeline coming.
Right.
So the thought was, well, obviously get more in the pipeline, and then what can I do next? And turned out I ended up talking to a number of different agencies in the area, larger agencies, more traditional agencies, and ended up merging with one.
Oh, okay.
I got an offer from one to merge, and I did that for about a year, year and a half. And I won't name any names, but at the end, it seemed like they didn't really want digital as part of their services. And as I decided it was time to leave, I said to the owner, I said, well, it seems like you're not interested in digital. And his response was, well, we don't want to be a digital agency.
That's kind of what you do.
Yeah, that's why I was here. But, and then I thought, well, how about corporate life? I haven't done that for a long time. Maybe I'll try that, something a little more stable. At that point, we had already had our first kid. And my wife had finished nursing, so she was going to start working. And I thought, okay, it would be a good time to try something different, go back to corporate life. And that was not my greatest experience either, because the company was going through a lot of changes. And every quarter it was like, well, are we going to have jobs?
Oh, wow.
And then the politics, and I just don't do politics very well. And so it just got me thinking that I really want to be back where I was.
How long did you stay in that job?
2.5 years.
Wow.
And I wear a Fitbit. And it has a thing that does your resting heart rate. And it was up here. I don't remember the numbers, but it was pretty high. It was bouncing around up at this high level. The week that I decided that I was done, dropped down and flatlined.
Fascinating.
Friday, when it came around, I was really done, dropped down again, and it's never gone back up. It's bounced around, but never going above that level again. So it was physically bad for me to be in that situation.
You have actual medical evidence. Yes, data that you can point to on a chart and say, this is where I belong.
I think it really is. I was born that way. I tried to do corporate, or I've tried to do corporate, and it's never, it's just not my thing. I don't know.
So when you came out, I'm sure it was an easier decision. Well, maybe not.
Thankfully, my wife was working. So she carried our insurance. So I didn't have to worry about that. And I knew that she had an income.
Right.
So it made it easier. And we talked about it. And she was like, do it. She kept saying towards the end, she's like, why are you still there? Seriously, why are you still there?
Yeah.
Because I was afraid to make that jump. With her support was the reason why I was able to jump.
So was it easier to ramp up a business the second time?
Yes. And partly because with the original merger, there was a gentleman's agreement that any clients that I brought with me that wanted to go with me when I left, if I left, could go with me and they wouldn't fight it. So there was maybe 3 clients that did.
Okay.
And I worked on them the 2.5 years while I was still at the full-time job.
Oh, so you kept some side work.
Yeah, so I kept hustle. And then, so I wasn't starting from zero. I still had that work going. So if anybody is in a corporate job and wants to make the jump, don't just jump with nothing.
Right.
It definitely helps to do a side hustle first and then do it.
Yeah, line up something. Yeah. At least one client could get you through some of those lean times. That's great.
So then also, when I knew I was doing it, I basically took my LinkedIn profile, got all the emails out of it, exported them all out, and just emailed everybody and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. Going back on my own. This is what I'm going to be offering. And I got a president of a large agency. I'd done work for them in like 2010.
Sure.
And he wasn't the president then. He became the president. Emailed me and said, hey, I always loved the work that you did for us. I want to talk. They gave me 4 clients like almost right out of the gate. So.
Wow. It's amazing how powerful that network is.
Yeah.
And had you not sent that email, right?
I would have been just sitting here.
Yeah, just waiting. So I'm assuming no regrets.
Oh, no.
I mean, this is it. You're not doing that dance again back and forth.
No,
right?
I know. I know what I'm capable of, and it's not sitting in a cubicle at a corporate place.
Yeah, office, no, absolutely. For anyone who wants to make the leap is thinking about it, any advice?
One, try and get something lined up before you do it. Don't jump just because you want out of a job. Jump because it's something you want to do.
Yeah.
And if you have the ability, and it's not for everybody, I mean, those ups and downs, some people can't stomach it. They can't stomach the stress, or they want that structure.
Yeah.
You really have to know yourself.
Well, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes to tell me your story and talk about the pivots.
Yeah.
Good luck with
the pivot and the reverse.
The pivot, the non-pivot, and then the pivot. Yeah. It's great. Good luck with everything.
Yeah, thanks.
The Doers Podcast is produced by Jason Mundock at the Candy Factory,
a co-working space located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Find links and show notes for this podcast and all of our episodes online
at the Candy Factory website,
coworkinginlancaster.com.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
What you love to do.
This is
going to
be such a success.
Hey friends, Jason Mundock here. All of the voices in our intro and outro are actually Candy Factory members.
Wait, what?
It's a great community, and yes, we have a good time because, frankly, work doesn't have to suck. And we all know that working alone does suck, so if you're a freelancer, entrepreneur, remote worker, or even a student here in Central PA, check out coworkinginlancaster.com and consider joining us at the Candy Factory, an awesome co-working space in Lancaster. Starting at just $50 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's for a community membership. You can meet other doers in a super creative and collaborative space, tap into business resources to help you get your job done efficiently, and learn all kinds of new and inspiring stuff through our network of really smart people, i.e., our members and guests. We even have a podcast club for members who want to make their own.
Wink, wink.
There's a membership level for everyone, so don't hesitate. Check it all out at coworkinginlancaster.com. Do it.
Do it.